Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Traction in baseball yesterday. We'll have Buster Olney on to get into that at 10:30. Of course, Cuddle, Marry, Trash at 11:30. Of course, Nobservations with all the little games inside a game that comes at 12:30. And we start by saying good morning to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris Canty.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I saw a story which makes me not feel that good, but I was fine until moments ago, and now I feel a little bit upset, and we'll get into that in just a moment. And good morning, Rick DiPietro. How are you?
Good morning, David. I'm doing all right. I mean, it's a roller coaster with baseball and now Dr. Fauci and everything else. I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but it's, I don't know whether to be happy one second, then I'm upset the next second. It's a lot to handle at this point.
Yeah, I think you gotta hedge your bets. And we'll open up the phone lines to you guys, 800-919-3776 as always.
Dave, before we kick off the show, I gotta remember to remind Rick that I wanna observate. And I want to nominate Mike Gundy for the rare decades-long Nobservation in the making. So I just want Rick to remind me to revisit that in the noon hour when we start Nobservations.
It's
a good one.
Make it a note.
It's a good one.
I'm putting Mullet, Gundy, remind CC. Done. Mullet,
there you go.
Gundy.
There you go.
Odd. Yeah. Yes. What is Mike Gundy? All right. So we got that, and we'll definitely get into him. I don't know how long he is for Oklahoma State. We'll get into that. Well, remember, Feinbaum the other day was saying, like, the sooner they get rid of this guy, the better. And it looks like maybe we're heading down that path. But a lot of people say, well, what are you talking about? Why is Dave a little bit upset? I think everyone's going to be a little bit upset. Dr. Fauci said he doesn't see how they're going to be able to play a football season realistically. And if they do, it's going to absolutely have to be in a bubble. So, you know, we had made mention of this yesterday, but Chris, when we make mention of it, it's like, all right, the guys are talking about it. It's worth listening to. Their opinions are usually pretty on target. But when Fauci comes out and says, NFL, real concern, how are they going to play? Bubble probably has to happen. Now you start to get a little bit upset about this, and this is where we are now with the NFL.
Yeah, Dave, I mean, we're radio show hosts, so anything we say is for the most part, speculative, right? We don't have as much information as Dr. Fauci, who is the country's top infectious disease doctor. So when he says something, it holds a lot of weight. And again, the concerns that he had are concerns that I've been talking about for the last several days when it comes to a return to play for football, because he said players are going to have to be tested nearly every single day and they're going to have to be isolated and the teams are going to have to create a bubble-like atmosphere. Other than doing that, there's no way to ensure the health and welfare of the players or the club employees if you're asking, you know, 60, 70, 80 people to do the right thing every single day and to make sure that when they leave the facility, they don't come into contact with somebody that could be a carrier of the virus. Like that's next to impossible to be able to accomplish that. That's what John Harbaugh said at the end of the week. So again, when it comes to the logistics of it and trying to be practical about how to implement protocols, I just don't see how the NFL gets this done unless they require the players to be isolated and create a bubble-like atmosphere at the practice facility every single day.
Which would seem virtually impossible. I mean, especially when you talk about, a true bubble is really not traveling, right? I mean, you have a bubble with the NHL, you're in a hub city, and you have a bubble in the NBA where you're going to have guys that can either a bus or they can walk back and forth, but everything is contained within the bubble. That's not going to be the case with Major League Baseball. That won't be the case with the NFL.
But I think Major League Baseball, his thought is we're in a better spot health-wise now and will be over the summer than we will be in the fall. So baseball postseason might be an issue, but the NFL starts when he seems to think it's going to get bad.
No, but it's sport, period. It's the nature of the sport. I mean, he said this a couple different times. The NFL is the perfect breeding ground for the spread of COVID-19.
Well, of course. Yes, absolutely.
And then on top of it now, you talk about, you know, as it starts to get cooler, you're in flu season and everything else. I mean, if we have a second wave, it's going to be a huge problem. And we talked about this yesterday. I said this is going to be the next conversation. If you're worried about baseball, you have to be scared to death about football. You have to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think everybody recognizes that there's no protective gear that the players could wear that would keep a player that has COVID-19 from spreading it to somebody else that's on the field. Football is a collision sport. So, I mean, if one guy has got it, it's only a matter of time. It's a matter of when, not if, somebody else gets infected on the football field. That's why you have to make sure that nobody that's participating in practices or the games actually has the virus. So that's why you have to focus on trying to isolate the players. And while you may not be able to create a true bubble-like atmosphere like the NBA is attempting to do down in Orlando, what you could do is what most teams typically do during training camp, which is have the players in a hotel, the teams take over a hotel, and you have the players go from that hotel to the practice facility, and at the end of the day, they go back to that hotel. They're not allowed to go anywhere else. That's what you would have to do, and of course you're going to be depending on guys doing the right thing, but, I mean, that's what you would have to try to create if you're the NFL, and you have to test the players, every single one of them, every single day.
Yeah. Here's the quote from Dr. Fauci. Unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, which you just said, it would be very hard to see how football is able to play this fall at all. If there's a second wave, which is certainly a possibility and which would be complicated by the predictable flu season, football may not happen this year at all.
Yeah, but to what Chris said, I mean, that's not going to happen either. I mean, the NFL players aren't going to agree to have to be put in a bubble for the entirety of the season.
No.
That's not
well, if it means them getting checks, they'll consider it, because we recognize that football, unlike the other sports, they don't have guaranteed salaries, and the majority of players are living a thousandaire's lifestyle. They can't afford to miss an entire season's worth of checks. They can't. So, yeah, players are going to be willing to explore every option to play a season. So that's why I think the players in the NFL have a little more financial motivation than any other of the major professional team sports, just from the sheer economics of the situation.
That they'd be willing to concede some of their rights, yes, to play football because they 100%. Need to play football.
Yeah, uh-huh. You're just talking about the top 10 to 12 guys on the roster that could probably afford to sit out an entire season. The rest of the guys, I mean, league minimum is $500,000. The rest of those guys got to go back to work. Plus, if you're a football player, can you really afford to give up an entire season, even if it's because of COVID-19, knowing that your career span is only 4 years? I don't know. I think football players would have a little more motivation than the other guys to get back to work just from the financials of it.
You're probably right as far as motivation is concerned, and maybe they find a way to figure that out. I just think, I mean, when you look and you start talking bubble, I mean, it's not going to be a bubble. You can keep your guys in hotels and go back and forth and everything else, but you're still going to have to jump on planes.
Right.
And then you have to worry about the hotel that you're staying at in the other city and who's serving the food and everything else. I mean, if you thought basketball was tough and the NHL was tough and Major League Baseball is going to be tough, I mean,
football's
the
ten
NFL
times
is
tough. It's 10 times
the NFL,
as tough.
The NFL and college football is a whole different level.
Well, first of all, how many people travel to a game, Chris? 90?
Yeah. I mean, when you consider coaching staffs, players, I mean, they're talking about expanding the practice squad rosters from 10 to 16 and having those guys available to travel with the team as well. I mean, all of those things are consideration. So, yeah, Dave, you're talking about 90, 100 people traveling with the team when they go on these road games.
So how does that work? So they're going to get on a plane and then go to L.A. and then stay at a hotel in L.A. and then come into contact with whoever they come into contact with?
Well, they would probably have to take over a hotel, Dave. I mean, the way that we're talking about it now, like, you would have them looking at taking over a smaller hotel for their teams and just having only that team and their personnel at that hotel. Okay. That's what it would have to be. I couldn't see any other way. I couldn't see them going to like one of those big hotels like a Westin
or Marriott
doing that.
And then mingling with people and having fans there. But you still got to get on a plane and you still got to get to the stadium and you still got to then play a football game, which sounds like it's going to be the most dangerous by far of any sport to just participate in.
Well, Dave, you're talking about a lot of hurdles, and that's why the NFL and the NFLPA's medical advisors are meeting today to try to outline what they believe the protocols should be for a return to play, how they would actually execute this, how they would go about trying to keep everybody involved safe. I mean, the NFL has had the benefit of time. Like, they haven't had to be like the NBA or the NHL or Major League Baseball just based on the calendar. They've had time to kind of discuss these things and have preliminary conversations. But now we'll start to see what they come up with as we move closer to when it's being reported that these teams will report to training camp. So we'll see. They're talking about the middle of July. After this meeting, we should have some more information about what the NFL intends to do to keep everybody safe in a return to play.
I would do it sooner rather than later, in all honesty.
What, get started earlier?
Just to have an idea of what it's going to look like, how it's going to work. I mean, if John Harbaugh says it's going to be impossible, then, I mean, if that's going to be the case, you got to figure out how this thing is going to work. I mean, when you start talking about, you know, how this thing spreads and how quickly it could spread in a locker room, I mean, between, you know, the physicality of the sport, the close contact, on top of it, how much time you actually spend in, you know, in the building with your teammates and meeting rooms and everything else, close proximity, I mean, for an extended period of time. Yeah, I mean, Chris, you're there, what, 6:30 to what time? 8 o'clock at night, usually?
At the during the regular season or during training camp?
Both.
Those are two different things.
Both. Like, how long do you spend? How long do you spend?
Yeah, training camp, you're talking about a 14-hour day. So you're at the facility 6:30, and you're there until 10 at night. During the regular season, it's more like a 10-hour day.
So you're going to have to be creative. You're going to have to decide how many days a week you're going to have practice, like legit practice, where it's going to be contact practices. If you're going to be okay with guys leaving the facility and doing, you know, your position meeting Zoom-wise rather than sitting in the same room, that would probably make more sense than trying to get guys in a room, even if you're socially distancing.
Well, if
you're still breathing the same air.
I don't think you can have guys in the facility if there's a chance that they have COVID-19.
No, so, I don't either.
I get what your concern is about the meeting rooms, but I don't even think they can be in the building if you're worried about that.
No, if you think they have it, you're just saying it all, aren't you?
I'm saying in general.
No.
To try to keep them as socially distanced as possible. Like, schedule-wise, how are you going to have guys? I mean, because, again, I was listening this morning to Dr. Sills, who's the chief medical officer for the NFL, and one of the questions that they asked on Golic and Wingo this morning was, and we've talked about this a bunch of different times, you know, quarterback room. Quarterback's the most important position. If one of your quarterbacks tests positive and he spent this much time around the other quarterbacks, what happens to those quarterbacks?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're truly tracing properly and God forbid any of your quarterbacks test positive, aren't you supposed to isolate them all for the next 2 weeks now?
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question. Like,
right.
What happens now? What do you do? I mean, they'd be tested, but how long does it? See, that's the one thing I don't fully understand yet. Because we've been talking about this, trying to get my mother wants to come down and see the kids. Do we actually know? This could hopefully someone can call in and tell me the answer to this. I've been trying to find out is it 10 to 14 days is the incubation period? Like how quickly would you know if that person has it or not?
Yes, I think that's why you're supposed to isolate for 14 days because you would start to get sick within that amount of time.
No, but I'm not even saying symptom wise. Like would it show up? Like
Would it show up on a test?
Yeah, yeah. I think like say the average person, it shows up on a test within about 5 days.
Within 5 days?
Yes.
Okay, so that's another issue. Like you wouldn't know. Like
you could be exposed to it, start to percolate in your system, but not test positive right away as well. Yes.
No, that's an issue. That's a problem.
That's a major problem. I mean, listen, realistically, honestly, you probably shouldn't play football, right? Of course, we want it more than anything, and it would be painful to not have it, but if you're talking about in a perfect world, which makes the most sense, where money's not an issue, you probably shouldn't play football. Now, I don't want to say that, but that's the truth, Chris.
Yeah, but we don't live in a perfect world.
Of course not.
The NFL is a $15 billion business annually, so they have a lot of motivation to try to figure out how they can get the season underway. And I guess if you're going to move forward, if the players want to do it and the league and the owners all want to do it, then I think you just try to find the safest way possible, and to me that includes being tested every single day and trying to isolate the players to the best of your ability. But I believe that once the players are in the building, I mean, even if you're talking about trying to social distance and all that stuff, you can't social distance on the practice field. So I don't think, you know, whether or not they're in the same meeting rooms matters as much. You know, it's the reality is that you're going to try to protect the practice facility at all costs because that's where the players are going to spend most of their time during the regular season. And if and when a player tests positive, you got to have a strong plan as to how you're going to isolate him. The only question is, how are you going to treat the rest of the guys on the team that could have potentially been infected by that one player? That's the part that nobody knows, but I think that's why they're being so aggressive with trying to explore options to expand rosters.
I think it's going to come down to, again, I mean, sitting here talking about it, I mean, there's a million different things that could come up. You're not going to keep everyone 100% safe, even in a bubble mm-hmm. situation, I don't think. It's going to be the risk tolerance of the players. We've seen NFL players get it. They've gotten through it. Like, how much risk? Because, and Chris, you mentioned the economics. How much risk are these football players going to be willing to take on, knowing that the league, even with the safety protocols, can't guarantee their safety?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would venture to say that NFL players, out of all the professional team sports, the major ones in this country, they'd probably be more willing to take on the more risk just because the nature of the game they play is more risk to physical injury and long-term, you know, health being jeopardized. So I would say that the NFL players would be on board with it, but it's just a matter of how much risk are we talking about the players absorbing. I think that's the one thing that we have to wait to see from DeMaurice Smith and from new union president J.C. Tretter. We got to figure out exactly how risk tolerant the players are and, you know, how that's going to be reflected in whatever protocols are going to be implemented for this coming season.
All right, let's get to some of the calls. 800-919-3776, like we told you earlier. Buster Olney will join us in about 20 minutes from right now. Ira in Staten Island. Good morning, Ira. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Dave, Chris, Rick. Glad you're all safe. And, you know, the NFL has a monumental task to get this league going forward. And you know what? They got to take it day by day, Chris. I agree with you. They got to get tested every day. I just don't see how they're going to be able to function with a contact sport, with practice under normal circumstances. I just don't see it. And you know what? As the league starts and when the season does get started, hopefully there won't be as many players that will get sick as maybe some of the experts are predicting. One concern that I have that I don't think anybody brought up, you have a lot of coaches in this league. I'm going to estimate 15 to 20%. That is 60 years or over. Some of them have some underlying issues. Take Bruce Arians. He has a lot of health concerns.
Look at Andy Reid. You don't think Andy Reid, I mean, certainly he's not. He doesn't have a healthy look to him. He's clearly overweight.
Of course. So how do they address and how do they, I mean, you have to address the players in person. And game day on sidelines. I mean, is Adam Gase going to talk to Donald and stay 6 feet apart? I mean, there's just so many unknowns and so many things that has to be considered. And like you said, the travel in hotels, on airplanes, meals, is it really all worth it? You know, I know the mental health and the financial thing, but if you're really risking people's health, and that's what the players are going to have to decide. So even though the money, you don't want to give up the money, you know, if the players decide that they take a vote and a lot of them are against it, I can't fault them. I really can't.
No, I don't think anyone can. And to speak to your point about Adam Gase, that might be in Sam Darnold's benefit to be socially distanced from Adam Gase.
You go nowhere near Adam Gase.
To be completely honest. But I mean, it's here's the thing, Ira. It's going to come down to what sounds like, you know, each player's risk tolerance. Is every player's different. You know, there are players that are financially set that can afford to miss a full season, and there's a majority that can't. So how much risk are they willing to take? Here's the other thing, too. I mean, you mentioned coaches. You're seeing the pushback with NBA coaches. Like, they're willing to take the risk. The NBA coaches want to be a part of the bubble. They're willing to take the risk. The other thing, though, too, is if you don't go bubble, right, if you don't do a bubble situation, and we start talking about
can't.
Which they can't. I mean, who knows what they'll end up doing? But you start talking state to state, schools being open and everything else. I mean, if you're a parent, I mean, how often is your kid sick? Like, that's going to be one of the biggest hurdles. All these guys that have kids come home from school. I mean, that's, if anyone's going to get it, first it's going to be your kid in school. Then he's going to give it, he or she's going to give it to you, and then you're going to bring it to the facility. I mean, it's.
That's right. And then
it's a lot.
So incredibly quickly, and it's so lethal.
That's why I keep – that's what I'm telling you, man. Once they figure out what they want to do with these protocols, I would try to get the guys back as soon as humanly possible. Have them go about their day-to-days, go home, come back, do the kind of testing that you want to do, and see how it works out as a test case.
Because you're saying you'd rather have your players, if they're going to get infected with the virus, get infected now as opposed to during the season.
Yeah, because now you just speculate. I mean, we speculate that once one guy gets it, it's going to, you know, because of the contact and everything else, it's going to be rampant. But we don't really actually know. Because it was only two jabs. I mean, it was only Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, right?
As far as we know, I believe, yes.
So who knows? Like, I have no idea how quickly it would go through a team. Or if it would go, like, if they trace it properly, if it would go through the team.
They might not. I mean, I think some people could come in contact with it and not get it, and others can come in contact with it and you know, have full-blown case of it. I think we still have...
Well, I mean, we talk about staying 6 feet apart and socially distancing for a reason, because the top infectious disease doctors recommended those protocols, saying that it would be safer and you would have less of a risk of being infected with COVID-19. I mean, you can't do that on a football field, so you're going to be in proximity to all these guys in practices, in games. I think that if I had to lean one way in terms of whether or not one player could potentially infect the entire locker room, I would probably say that, yeah, that could actually happen. That's probably more likely than not. If a guy came into the practice facility with COVID-19 and was interacting with his teammates in his day-to-day basis, you'll have a lot of guys that would end up having it in the foreseeable future. So To me, I think it's still one of those huge issues because of the nature of football. You're going to run the risk of having an entire team be infected by just one person that has the virus.
Let's go to EJ in Whippany. EJ, you're next up on 98.7.
How you guys doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to let you know where I'm coming from. I work for a fire department, and I've been on an ambulance for the last couple months, so I've been around all this since it started. And as far as I know, I just wanted to comment about the whole quarterback room, and you said if one of the quarterbacks has it, it kind of, you assume that all the quarterbacks will have it. But the way that we work it, if I go into somebody's house, they have COVID-19, as long as I have all my PPE on, if I have my N95 mask on, if I'm covered up, it's assumed that I didn't come into contact with that person because of all the PPE that I had on. So if these NFL players are wearing their PPE, they're wearing their masks, even if they have to wear it during practice, if one person walks into a meeting with COVID-19, as long as everybody else has PPE on, it's not assumed that they're going to come into contact and
get
the virus.
But, EJ, how realistic is it that you're going to get an NFL team?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how is an N95 mask going to stay on an NFL player during a practice or in a game?
That's just one of many forms of PPE. Everybody has to have some kind of a glove on. Everybody has to maybe individually wash their stuff after practice. Don't come into contact, but you're not throwing your stuff into a bin and washing it together. You know, one person goes into the laundry room, has to wash their stuff. The next person goes in, throws their stuff
EJ,
in there.
But, EJ, come on. I mean, for us to do it as individual people, I think, is very realistic. For a team of 50, 60, 70 guys to do this, it doesn't add up, does it?
No.
Well, I can't kind of disagree with that. I mean, if that's what you have to do to kind of avoid contact, then that's what you have
to do.
Yeah, but
you're not. Listen,
not washing their own practice gear.
No, but even but past that, like, I mean, listen, equipment managers, I would hate to be an equipment manager this season in any of these sports. You talk about, you know, laundry, disinfecting all the equipment and everything else, you know, switching balls and the biggest hurdle is going to be is that when you get on a practice field, first of all, you know, quarterback's not going to wear gloves on both hands. So if one of the quarterbacks has it, it's going to be on the football. And then on top of it, you're in a huddle. You're not going to socially distance a huddle. Quarterbacks are usually, I mean, the quarterbacks usually stand, I mean, Chris, you tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, it's usually quarterbacks in, like, close proximity to each other, talking back and forth with the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
It's not just the meeting rooms.
Yeah. That's the hardest part. I mean, how do you manage it once you get in between the white lines on the practice field and on the game field? That's the part that I don't know whether or not they have a solution. I mean, when you talk about players tackling one another, you talk about players running into each other, all of that contact, all of those collisions, there's going to be some sweat flying. There's going to be some blood flying. There might even be some saliva, some spit flying. I mean, I don't know how you mitigate all of that throughout the course of a practice or a game. I mean, the nature of football, it's a collision sport. Those things are going to happen. I don't know that there's any PPE available that's going to be able to prevent that. I don't know. You guys tell me if I'm looking at this wrong, but I'm just saying in my time around the sport, I don't know that there's any protective gear that can keep blood, sweat, and saliva off of other guys when you're running into them.
Of course not.
Okay. So that's your problem.
I mean, he called thinking he was going to give us ideas of how this is so great and can work, and he just made me feel even worse about it.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I mean, when you're in what the job is, and he's in the ambulance and everything else, the person that you're going to help, you have your PPE on and everything else. When you're playing football, the whole point of the game is to tackle the other person.
Like that's to knock the hell out of the other guy in the other uniform. Yeah,
you're not trying to avoid anybody.
No,
it's the tackle. I mean, just to hit someone as hard as you possibly can. I mean, the only ones that are going to be safe are the wide receivers playing against the Giants secondary. That's it.
Yeah, that's not funny. what do you have to do that for all the time? It's sad enough that we have to start the show with an article from Fauci saying football could be in serious doubt. Now you got to take shots like that?
Dave, we got to laugh to keep from crying, man. Come on. It's okay. It's okay.
Let me ask you this. And I know this is weird. If you didn't play football this year, if there was no NFL season, how would you go about a draft next year?
Don't ask questions that are this difficult.
I don't even think that's a difficult question, Rick. I mean, the advanced scouting that these teams do, you got the national and
rankings. But would the Giants pick four again?
Oh, you're talking about the order of the draft.
Yeah, all of it.
I would
do a Madden simulation.
I would assume so.
Madden simulation of the season.
No, stop it. I would assume so.
They're going to try to get football in. They're going to try to get football in.
Of course they're going to.
Of all the, I mean, you talk about, Chris mentioned it, $15 billion. You got players, I mean, a vast majority of players incentivized to play because of how short the career spans are. On top of it, you know, not everyone's making, you know, life-changing money.
Well, Rick, let's not ignore the obvious because you say it all the time. It's not like the owners really care about the players.
No. care less.
I mean, really, the protocols that you're going to put in place are just for public perception that you're prioritizing the health and safety of the guys. But the owners don't care about the players. They don't. The players are interchangeable parts. Other than the quarterbacks in the elite, the rest of the guys are just, you know, you swap them out one for the other. That's it.
It's true.
Yeah, this is all CYA. I mean, all these protocols and everything.
This is all CYA. This is all about liability, CYA, 100%. And if you have a plan in place, something that the union and the NFL both agree on, then that means that the players can't come back and try to sue the league for complications related to COVID-19. That's what this is about.
Yep. This ain't
going to be no Buckeye pledge for the NFL players.
No.
The NFL is going to be very clear on its position about liability as it comes to the coronavirus.
Could you imagine, though, no NFL?
No, I don't even want to have that conversation.
But why'd you bring it up at the top of the show?
Well, I think we had to.
No, we talked about it yesterday. I mean, we kind of insinuated this is going to be the next conversation. What happens with the NFL?
We were ahead of the curve, of course.
Which we usually are.
Yeah,
just like the whole MLB agreement. May have some sound.
I can't wait to talk to Buster about everything.
May have some sound teed up for that.
Oh, would you have a look how smart I am kind of sound?
No, it's not look how smart I am. It's just like you act like I'm just going. I'm just doing this like I'm just making predictions willy nilly. Like I'm not doing homework. Like
Dave,
you're saying,
just doing what you typically do. Just pat yourself on the back.
Mm-hmm. But he's got audio for it. But he's taking it to another level. Typically with me, I just like spur of the moment, like, oh, I think I said that. Let me pat myself on the back. He spent time talking to Santiago saying like, all right, listen, I think yesterday at about 11:15.
No, it wasn't yesterday.
So he went through production elements in order to make sure that everybody knew.
This is weeks ago. This is weeks ago. What did I say? First of all, it started with the whole NHL thing. When we had a guest on that said they're going to be bracketed. And I said, no, timeout. It's going to be reseeded. What happens? NHL, it's reseeded, right? Correct. Check a box for Rick. I've been saying this, and you guys don't even say I haven't, because I got sound of it, that we would get somewhere around 65 games would be the agreement with Major League Baseball and the union.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's that's where it looks like it's headed.
Yeah, we're
I don't know about that, though, Rick, because, I mean, the owners still really didn't add any money. They're still at $1.5 billion for players' cost in the regular season. The last proposal that the players had was $2.24 billion. So if we're talking about splitting a baby on that, I mean, you're talking about somewhere around $1.7, $1.8 billion. I don't know that the owners are willing to come up that high. I don't know the exact number of games for prorated pay that will result in, but I think it's going to be higher than 65. In order to get Tony Clark and the players to waive the right to file a grievance, I think it's going to have to be higher than 65 games, but it'll be in the neighborhood.
On ESPN Daily, WNBA champion, MVP, and overall superstar Maya Moore. She shocked the world when she left the game in 2019, and even more so when her cause came to light to free one man from prison. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. All right, 800-919-3776. We do what we do. And that is Andy from Merrick is coming up in a little bit with his trivia of the day at 11:30, Cuddle, Marry, and Trash. And I wonder, you had teased us the Adam Sandler movie yesterday. Is that the direction you go in today?
No.
No?
No, I'm going to save that one.
Okay. All right.
So I made a phone call yesterday to our producer, Ray Dinahan. We went back and forth, and I think we came up with a really good idea for a Thursday headed into the weekend.
Oh, that's nice. Because tomorrow's fun CMT, right?
Like tomorrow's fun CMT. So this is a sports-related CMT mm-hmm. that I think ties in perfectly with what's going to happen this weekend.
This weekend. Father's Day CMT?
Maybe.
Maybe, just maybe. So we got CMT at 11:30. Then at 12:30, of course, we've got Nobservations. And within Nobservations, what time did Rick go to bed? And a very condensed, up-to-date weather report as well. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here today. And we're waiting on Buster Olney, who's going to join us in just a moment as well.
Now, Dave, you have honors on America's Favorite Game Show, What Time Rick Went to Bed, last night, correct?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I can end the week right now, today, 12:30. Finish it.
You could end the week right now. This is going to be the last one I'm going to do for this week because, as you guys know, I'm not going to be on the show tomorrow observing Juneteenth.
Yeah, so maybe you can get – if it comes down to it that you win today, maybe you can put your guess in ahead of time.
Okay.
For tomorrow. So we'll something. Because we don't want a fifth game to not be played during this exciting game show.
Or we could just call it a tie if I win and go push it to the next week.
I guess we could. We'll discuss it later. We got pressing things now as we bring in one of our buddies on the show, Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, guys.
All right. So how close are we? Sounded yesterday like this is, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, but in typical Major League Baseball fashion, maybe we're not as close as we thought yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Everyone blew up the balloons and the air slowly came out of them. So when that initial, got initial word about what the proposal was from Major League Baseball to the players after the conversation between Rob Manfred and Tony Clark in person out in Arizona, 60 games starting up on July 19th, then I think there was optimism generally because, hey, they're talking. As Rob Manfred acknowledged in his conversation with Mike Greenberg the other day, they hadn't been talking up until then. And for the first time, the owners gave the players an offer in which they'd get 100%, pro rata of their salary. So that seemed to be two good developments. But I got to tell you, we were getting some of those initial details. What I was hearing from folks on the player side was, okay, what's the rest? Okay, what else we got? Okay, there's got to be more, right? There's more? There's got to be more? There's got to be some adjustments that help the players in free agency this fall, or maybe there's going to be more negotiation with more games. And I think that's the question this morning that everyone is wondering. I don't think 60 games, full prorated salary is going to get it done. Maybe the sweet spot is somewhere between 68 games, 72 games, something in that range. But I think the players are going to want more. Again, the fact that they're talking, there is a sense of optimism. Another thing, too, that was very interesting when we heard about this meeting and then Rob Manfred issued his statement right after, folks in the industry began to break it down and his actions, and then they looked at the statement he put out, which began the words, at my request. It definitely read like a lawyer who was checking all the boxes if there's a future grievance, that he can use these words to undercut, any suggestion of bad faith. At my request, paraphrase, I tried. We talked about a framework. I tried. I got on a plane and I saw you out in Arizona. I tried. So we'll just have to wait and see. The other thing, too, is that the lump of money that was offered by the players for 60 games is basically identical to what it was offered to them for the 72 games at 83% prorated salary. So that number hasn't moved. And just to put this into perspective, let's say that the magic number is 70 games, full prorated salary for the players. Excuse me. That means that at this moment, the difference between where the players would stand and where the owners would stand is Steven Strasburg's contract, $245 million. The incrementalism, like that measured against the value of this industry and the fact that this is hanging on, is shocking. And the first question that should be asked of Rob Manfred if in fact they make the final concessions that lead to a deal is, where were you guys 5 weeks ago with this?
Well, you know exactly where they were 5 weeks ago with this. It feels like, I mean, the more and more this goes on, and some of the things you just mentioned, it feels like a stall tactic by the owners. Because they want to just keep eating days, you know, on the calendar so they get to the number of games that they want to play.
And what I feel like they're that dramatic. I know other people in the industry feel the same way, is the damage that's being done to the sport in the interim. Again, if you measure the difference between the two sides and cast it against an industry that's, if you look at franchise values, probably worth about $50 billion, it's pennies. It doesn't make any sense that they're, from the owner's side, that they're this incrementalist and they're haggling this much as the house is burning, because of the long-term damage to the industry. You know, I've had people rank and file who work in baseball on both sides. It basically said to me they're disgusted, like they're appalled by what is happening with their industry and the image of their industry. As one person said, they hate us, referring to fans.
Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So Buster, what would to happen if there was no postseason? Because we're talking about an expanded postseason, and we're talking about a lot of money involved in the postseason. What were to happen if, and Dr. Fauci came out with this, you know, yesterday and then today, talking about the NFL and Major League Baseball, that he thinks when we get to October, we could have wave number two. That's got to be a huge issue as far as the conversations are concerned, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And all along, dating back to March and April when, you know, they first started up conversations about how to restart this thing, a lot of the reaction got from people in baseball was, look, we could put all this in place and the whole thing could derail. You know, right now, the disagreement over money is the Mount Everest of these negotiations. But right behind it, even if they get that settled, is the K2, which is the coronavirus, which could derail all of it, where, you know, if you get hot spots in certain places or certain cities get shut down and you got to move teams around, it's going to be a challenge either way, which is why I've said all along, I thought there's no chance this works unless you have legitimate full collaboration, cooperation, which, again, I think that should have informed some of the owners' offers 4 or 5 weeks ago when they started this process. Like, we need the players on board. Because this thing and what we're going to face in the process and the regular testing and trying to lock players down and prevent them from being vulnerable to infection, that's going to require a lot of cooperation from the players. And that's why the idea, I think, of ramming a system down the throat was so foolhardy.
Buster, you brought up the fact that the owners in the last two proposals, the money was pretty much identical in terms of what they were willing to offer the players in salary, the 72 games at 83%, which would have been $1.5 billion, and the 60 games, which what Rob Manfred proposed yesterday to Tony Clark, and that's going to be at full prorated at $1.5 billion. The players' last proposal was at $2.2 $4 billion. So how do you see the two sides reconciling the money aspect of this thing?
I agree with you, and I feel like that, you know, given how unified the players are right now, and the fact that they seem to be supporting everybody. Look, if later in the today, for example, if Tony Clark comes out with a statement and says, look, this is just not acceptable, they continue not to move off the dollar figures, you're going to have an absolute tidal wave of players supporting that point of view, which is why, you know, coming into the week after, you know, Rob's interview with Mike Greenberg and the negative response to that, I thought this situation can only be resolved one of two ways. One would be full owner surrender. Look, we need you guys on board. We're going to give you what you want. We're going to make the concessions necessary to make it happen, which should have happened in the middle of May, given the circumstances. And the other alternative is that you do have the hawkish owners among the 30 owners basically have their will manifested, and baseball begins a three-year labor war. So it was either going to be total capitulation, I felt like coming into the week, from the owners, or total war from the owners.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, you keep going back to you know, some of the things the owners can do to kind of sweeten the pot. And I know this, and Chris knows this, doing CBA negotiations in our respective sports. They always like to give you things that don't necessarily cost them money, and they make you feel good. I mean, what are some of those things that they could offer? Because it seems like they're stuck on the $1.5 billion as far as the money they want to spend.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, and I remember talking to you guys about this in early May, and it might be that it's you know, something that would take too long to war game out and to really do an analysis of it. But I can tell you this, that the concern all along has been there among the agents for the guys who are going to be free agents this fall. Yep. In fact, you know, I've been actually, when we talk about the owner's incrementalism, I'm surprised at no point, you know, in their meetings, someone didn't say, hey, take the batteries out of your cell phones, and then, well, let's have a frank conversation. Even if we give them their money now, this fall, guys, we can kill them in free agency. Because the revenues are going to come back so far, and you would assume that the free agent numbers are going to come down. So I thought all along, and I, as I say, agents have felt too, that there needs to be some mechanism put in place to protect veteran free agents. And I'm just spitballing here, but imagine if you had a, okay, as part of this agreement, Major League Baseball also agrees that any guy who has 6-plus years in the big leagues gets a major league offer. It's got to be at least $3 million or $4 million, or maybe the major league average salary, so that you don't have absolute gouging going on this fall. I think in lieu of that, that's going to happen. Like, those mm-hmm. guys are absolutely going to get destroyed. You know, Major League Baseball also, in getting the players to agree to this expanded playoff format, if they can move forward, you know, they can give them a larger chunk of money from that. You know, they're obviously licensing and those sort of things, too, that they could add in. But the big thing is, I think, for the feeling among a lot of agents is it's important for the union to, as part of this agreement, don't have the one-time victory. Create something that you're building on as you're going forward, you know, some kind of a concession, some kind of a thread, so that when you go into 2021, you can work off of that as you continue to try to improve the player's position.
And, Buster, you're reading my mind, because that was where I was going next with the concessions that the owners could make. They already gave the players the service time, and they eliminated draft pick compensation as it relates to signing some players. And so now I'm looking at this thing outside of the monetary aspect of things. What are some other things that the owners could give, and how likely is it that the owners will do that in order to push this deal across the goal line?
Yeah, I think it's just going to come down to compensation at this point. Again, I felt like all along, and I thought that April and May were lost opportunities for both sides to be in regular engagement and just be spitballing and going back and forth with horse trading. They've run out of time. I mean, the reality is the clock are that they need to get something in place if they're going to play this year. You know, it's June 18th. You know, under this plan that Major League Baseball proposed, they would start the second spring training June 29th, and they would start playing games 3 weeks later. So they need more time to go into things like, okay, tanking. What are some anti-tanking measurements that we could put in there? And I think that's huge for the players, because every year, as we've seen 5 to 7 teams tanking, you know, that's taking tens of million dollars out of the market for the free agents. The service time manipulation that we've seen with guys like Chris Bryant and George Springer, where they're left 1 or 2 days from reaching free agency, that's got to be a part of whatever long-term deal these two sides come up with. Because you talk about the ultimate bad faith when you hold a player like George Springer down in the minor leagues, and that decision, what, back in 2013, now has cost him tens of millions of dollars, you know, for a player who deserved to be in the big leagues and it earned his promotion at that time. And I do think that there are going to be, in the next CBA, there could be major adjustments in the luxury tax thresholds, but those are things that I think are just simply going to require more time than they have available in the moment, which is why, in the end, it might come down to how many games would the owners agree to, and how much money can the players get.
Buster Olney with us here, 98.70 ESPN. Buster, we're still at the point, as badly as they've messed this thing up the entire way through, where baseball could be the first sport to return, right? NBA going to be very late July, NHL probably late July, early August. From the proposal yesterday, MLB could come back mid to late-ish July. If we're close to being done, you have to feel optimistic, right? Do you still believe this deal gets done by the end of the weekend?
I would say under most circumstances, I would absolutely be confident. And there were, you know, points of optimism on both sides yesterday where you're talking to folks at the team level, you know, players. They're like, yeah, they have to, right? They're close. But, you know, the incrementalism in what the owners are doing makes it unpredictable. Like, it's mind-boggling to me that they would have dragged the sport through this 5 weeks of bad publicity, you know, squandered the opportunity to own the sporting stage in early July, to really, you know, properly rebrand the sport, make people excited about the sport, and instead have, again, taken it through a labor war. And at the same time they're doing that and having these conversations with the players, you know, we hear the stories of the richest owners in baseball, the learners, looking to cut the, you know, the salaries of their minor leaguers from $400 to $300 a week. The Oakland Athletics owner, John Fisher, cutting his minor leaguer's salary and then having to reverse it when it became an embarrassment. You know, the Pirates owner, Bob Nutting, cutting team contributions to the employee 401k program for people who are probably making $30,000 to $60,000 a year. That incrementalism has been so, you know, damaging during this time, and I feel like it really has a chance to damage going into the future, and has made it really difficult to predict what's going to happen, because we keep waiting for the owner in the room or on the Zoom call to go, guys, what are we doing? Get this off the board. This is relative pennies when we're talking about a difference between the two sides. In this moment, might be $245 million. Are you serious? Let's go. Let's build something. Let's make people excited. Because that's, as I wrote the other day, as we sit here, you know, this great opportunity for baseball, they're building nothing. They're growing nothing. They're only damaging their sport.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, and this is why I love you. I mean, it feels like the more we talk about this over the last couple of weeks. I mean, this was always going to be a fight. Right. These two sides don't really necessarily like each other very much at the point. But I mean, I've said this a couple times and I'm glad you brought it back up. Why not use this as an opportunity to work towards, you know, some of the things that you want to achieve in the upcoming CBA negotiations? You know, take some wins that way. Is this, and in saying that, I want to know this, all the people that you talk to, what is the feeling around baseball of Tony Clark in his relationship with his players? Are they still confident in Tony Clark after what happened in the last CBA negotiation?
Well, I think in the last week they certainly have coalesced around his message, and in this moment they have been. But there are broader questions, and there have been since that 2016 CBA when they were absolutely routed. You know, and yesterday I was talking with someone. You know, we heard that negotiation one-on-one. Yes, or the meeting between Rob Manfred and Tony Clark was a one-on-one meeting. And look, to me, like a one-on-one negotiation between Rob Manfred, who has, you know, decades of training, and he's done labor negotiations for years, would, you know, potentially it can be as problematic as Rob Manfred challenging Tony Clark to a home run derby. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's been, you know, my question on the player side in recent years. Look, in my opinion, the last 5 weeks, this is totally on the part of the owners, like how they've handled these negotiations and dragged the sport through it, and it's been terrible. But big picture, I do think the lack of engagement over the last 5 years, you know, since the Player Association was routed in those 16 negotiations, have hurt the players. That there have been moments of leverage, like, for example, when Major League Baseball has asked about pace of play initiatives, on-field initiatives. Why not work to flip those? Do constant horse trading. It doesn't cost you anything to get into a room and start, okay, you guys want this? Well, you know what? We want anti-tanking adjustments where you can't have the first pick in the draft in repeated years. Or we want to address service time manipulation. There just hasn't been a lot of that. And while, you know, I don't know if the owners would have aggressively engage the players. I do think back in April and May, I do think the mounting frustration on their side with the lack of engagement has contributed to how they handled things early in this process. And that's not good for either side. And I wrote in a column 2 weeks ago, both sides, when the dust settles in this current moment and they get an agreement or they the owners shut it down, I do think both sides need to do a serious self-assessment, a serious self-audit, and ask themselves, how did we get to such a toxic and unproductive relationship?
Buster, pragmatically speaking, can we have a baseball season this year without the players waiving the right to file a grievance over the length of the season?
No. And, Chris, that was one of the conditions that Major League Baseball, if there's an agreement, they're going to, you know, they're going to insist on. And then at that point, you know, assuming that if they get a deal done and the players agree to that, then it's just going to be about making the best of a bad situation. But that's going to be one of the conditions that baseball will expect that the players would agree to if they agree to the compensation.
All right, Buster. Appreciate it as always. Have a great weekend. And hopefully next time we talk to you, it's with baseball in the not so distant future.
It's got to be one way or the other soon.
Yeah, it'll be a great conversation, or it's going to be a morbid conversation. But as always, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go, and we go to Andy in Merrick with his questions of the day. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Before I get to my questions, I want to just mention, you guys have trained hard. You've worked hard for the last 3 weeks on trivia. You've shown to be an unbelievable talent. I think it's that you guys are ready at this point to challenge Kay, to challenge Carlin, to challenge any other sports host on this network in a trivia challenge. I'm throwing it down. I'm throwing it out there for you guys.
Yeah, but I think we would kill them, no?
I think you would.
You don't think we'd kill them?
Under my training, I think you guys would crush them.
I mean, you've trained us like Mick. I think we are chasing the chicken, and we're ready to roll here.
You guys are a lean, mean, fighting trivia machine. I'm throwing that challenge down. If they take it up, I'm all in.
I don't think they'll take it up.
All right. Well, speaking of trivia, today's questions are college football coaches.
Oh, boy.
Take it easy, Andy.
No, CC, I came in high and tight yesterday. We're going to give you a nice right down the middle.
All right.
Virginia's George Welsh ranks number 2 in ACC history in coaching wins with 134. Can you tell me who's number 1 in ACC history, the most wins?
Oh.
Now, is this conference?
Conference
wins, history. Or this is overall wins?
No, this is coach as an ACC coach.
As an ACC coach. Dave, I'm going to need your help on this one. Is Bobby Bowden?
How long was
Chris,
the farthest?
You don't need his help. You got the answer. Yeah, go for it, man.
Bobby Bowden?
You got it.
Okay.
I was thinking that as well, Chris.
But I know
Florida State
wasn't always in the ACC. That's why that's the part that threw me off.
Chris, do not question it, man. You are right. There. The challenge is there.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the soft toss, Andy.
Rick, there is no NFC South, but I'm going to take you down to your favorite region, the southeastern area of the United States.
The nether region. Yep, I appreciate that.
Bear Bryant had 292 of his career, 323 career wins as an SEC coach, by far the most. Can you tell me who's number 2?
I'm going to go with Steve Spurrier.
Oh, bang. Right.
Bang. Wow. Wow.
Old ball coach.
Wow. That was brilliant. Nice,
nicely done, Ricky.
Woo.
Dave, I'm going to bring you into the Big 12.
I'm just going to allow Rick to answer my question. That was sensational.
Yeah, there was no hesitation. Big 12, Dave. Mullet man himself, Mike Gundy, is the active coaching leader in wins. But can you tell me who's the all-time conference leader in the Big 12?
Oh, God. It's got to be Tom Osborne, no?
No.
Oh.
Come on, David, relax.
Well, not now. I don't know.
He said chasing. He said chasing chickens, not choking chickens. Relax.
Yeah,
get your mind right.
Yeah. I knew when I said that I shouldn't have said that.
Get your mind right.
Well, can I get a little help here from you guys?
A little XFL flavor.
What happened?
A little XFL flavor, perhaps.
Ooh, XFL. Hmm.
Well, I was going to say Bud Wilkinson, but clearly not him. And it's not Barry Switzer.
Come on, Dave. Think.
I don't know that I know it.
Think XFL coaches. XFL coaches.
In BCS era, this guy was the only one to have wins in the Rose Bowl, Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Fiesta Bowl. The only coach to do it in the BCS era. Out of Norman, Oklahoma.
Come on, David. Norman, Oklahoma. Come on, David.
You know it?
No, I don't know it. I'm just trying to jog your memory.
Well, you said XFL flair, which is confusing to me because it's not going to be Barry Switzer now.
Don't fall off the stoops here. Come on. You got this.
Oh, all right. So you handed it over to me. All right. So Bob Stoops.
All right, guys. Despite this little hiccup today, I still think you can take on the challenge of anyone. Stay healthy, guys.
Thank you, Andy. That's surprising.
Thanks, Andy.
That Bob Stoops has the second most wins in Big 12 history?
Yeah, but that's why he gave you the question, because he knows you're our strongest link, and he gave you the toughest question. I'm surprised when he said XFL, you didn't get it.
Yeah, I really kind of checked out with the XFL.
I think you checked out with the category, period.
Yeah, I think so, too.
As soon as he said Big 12, you were like, okay, that's it. I'm done. No interest.
You don't respect Big 12 athletics, Dave. Tell the truth.
That's not true.
This is the answer.
I thought Tom Osborne would have been the obvious answer. I'm gonna look at this. Well, you know, unless they consider Tom Osborne one in the Big 8, more in the Big 12.
Big 8 is respectable. I'd kill for Big 12. Imagine that.
Right.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.